What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, guys? Red Nation News Podcast. My name is Salman Lee at Red Nation Hoops on Twitter. You're joined by Forrest Walker at Do Nots on Twitter. How you doing, man?
Hey, pretty good. It's been a couple minutes.
Off-season preview edition of the Red Nation News Podcast. I'm so excited. I said on the last podcast, this is my second favorite time of the NBA calendar outside the playoffs. I love the off-season so much, and specifically July 1st. It's just the best. I was watching The Jump today, which is, by the way, like my second favorite. No, it's my favorite basketball show of all time. And Rachel Nichols coined the term second season as a way to describe the offseason. And I thought it was brilliant. Like, she's absolutely right. The offseason has become sort of a second season for the NBA. It's literally a 12-month-a-year sport. The NBA Finals literally just ended last week, and now we have the draft, which is the second biggest trade season for the NBA. We have July 1st and the off season. And Summer League. Like, yep. There's going to be a dead period for about a month and a half, but that's about it. It's going to be one giant roller coaster ride from now until basketball tips off again in late September.
Mostly. except for in August and September, which will always be boring.
Yeah. I don't think they'll have anything to fill that time slot for a while, at least in the CBA. So for the Rockets, I think this is going to be one big and nice test for owner Tillman Fertitta. Because last summer was kind of the honeymoon period. He had this nice contender gift wrapped for him right before the season started. The offseason was over by the point that the Rockets sold the team. And he said all the right things about Daryl in the front office and the luxury tax moving forward in that press conference. And during the season, he consistently said he's willing to pay the luxury tax if this team was good enough. Well, we're coming off a year where the Rockets just pushed the greatest team of all time to 7 games and might have won the series if not for some bad luck. I'd say this team certainly fits that description.
Yeah, they were better than anybody's realistic expectations, and there's no reason to believe they won't still be that good next season.
Yeah, even if you brought the same roster back, we're talking tens of millions of dollars in luxury tax payment. This team is going to get expensive. Like, this is going to be a real summer where he has to put his money where his mouth is. Like, this is why we worried about the Rockets, the sale of the Rockets, like, last summer. Like, we talked about how ownership is so important in the NBA. Like, it's easily the number one thing if you're talking about the stability of a franchise, how a franchise makes decisions going forward, money, everything. Like, this is why we were so worried that they had to get this right. This is big. This is going to be, like, right off the bat, this is going to be a summer where Tillman's pockets are going to be tested.
Yeah, he's about to pay. He's about to pay a lot because the Rockets have a lot of free agents, and they have a lot of free agents who are deserving of a lot of money, and more importantly, more than deserving, will be able to demand that much money.
Yeah, so I wrote about the offseason for RenaissanceNews.com, and I basically outlined how the Rockets have two possible routes this summer. And, like, they can go star chasing, which is going to be really complicated and difficult to pull off, or they can go the conventional route and bring this roster back unchanged. You and I have watched Daryl Morey operate for a decade now. We both know what he's going to do, what he's going to try to do. He's going to try absolutely. To go star chasing.
Yeah, and why wouldn't he? I mean, if you don't win, you need to get better. If you do win, you need to get better.
Right. First, let's talk about the conventional route and how much it's going to cost to keep these guys. Chris Paul, getting up there in age, just turned 33 this summer, and going to demand a max contract on the open market, at least 3 years, a full max. And Waj speculated on his podcast that he thinks that he's going to demand the full max because of the way he was traded to the Rockets and how he basically foregoed free agency, gave up $11 million, and that five-year max he could have got from the Clippers to come to the Rockets. And, you know, a lot of people around the NBA just think like they had like a little wink-wink agreement. Like, you don't have to pay me this summer, but next summer, like, you gotta bring your wallet to the table.
Well, either way, he's going to demand all of it, and it's going to be interesting to see what they do. I guess when it comes down to it, it's going to depend on what happens before it gets to that, because I guess we'll probably talk about it pretty soon. But there's a real possibility that some stuff hits some fans pretty quickly this offseason for Houston. But depending on when they do it, they might just be able to, like, basically give everybody the money they're asking for, and then Tillman just cuts a real big luxury tax check this summer.
They're talking about Chris Paul coming back like it's a foregone conclusion. Like, in the press conference they had, the exit interview, Daryl was talking about how Chris and James were planning for next year. Not Daryl, Mike was talking about it. And they were talking about how they were making their off-season routines and workout stuff. And, like, basically, like, this was, like, it's all a matter of the financials at this point. Like, he's coming back. I mean, there's no better spot on the market for him to go right now. This is a contending team. Outside of the Warriors, you're not going to get a better chance at a championship than this. And honestly, like the deal is going to be probably, after chasing a star, this is going to be the most interesting deal of the summer for the Rockets, because I honestly don't know how they're going to approach this. Like, you would think that Daryl Daryl absolutely is going to try to avoid a five-year max at all costs. Like, he's not going to pay a 37-year-old Chris Paul $45 million a year or whatever that is.
Yeah, years 4 and 5 would be an absolute nightmare in that scenario. Just intolerable.
Yeah, he's going to try to avoid that at all costs. But, you know, there is this, you know, this theory that the Rockets had an under-the-table agreement that he would get paid this summer. You know, that's possible too. I personally think the Rockets should try their best to. I think what's best for both parties may just be a 3-year deal, or maybe a 3+1 or something. Because he's not getting that 5th year. Like, that's gone. He's not. Yeah. The Rockets are not going to give him that 5th year at all. The best chance he has is maybe a 3+1 at best, and that 4th year being a team option or a 3-year deal, full max. I just can't see it. Like, I can't see the Rockets. Like, they're too prudent of an organization to be paying that much to a 37-year-old Chris Paul. They're just better than that.
Yeah, and I kind of think that it depends on the situation, once again, on who else they pick up, if anybody, before then. But I would not be surprised to see them give him, like you said, a 3+1 or a 4. But have it like a 3-year deal that's maximum, just all the money. Give him everything they can during that 3 years to try to buy that 5th year back from him, basically.
Yeah, like a Kyle Lowry sweetheart kind of deal. Like, everybody was worried about this with Kyle Lowry last summer, about the kind of contract he was going to demand, and he ended up taking a team-friendly. Well, I mean, it's still a lot of money. Don't get me wrong, it's still a crap load of money, but he took a 3-year deal. Very friendly to the team, and that's kind of what we're looking at. Like, that's kind of optimistically what the Rockets are going to want from Chris Paul. Clint Capella had a breakout season. Obviously, a monster playoffs. Like, I did not expect that from him in the playoffs. He elevated his play. Did really well with the increased minute load. Dominated his series. Like, he dominated his matchups. He had a monster year, and he's going to demand a bunch of money. Like, as a restricted free agent, there's going to be, like, the money's dried up right now. But as of right now, I'm looking at the restricted free agents available, and we're pretty much talking Aaron Gordon or Clint Capela as the best restricted free agent available right now. And I mean, I wouldn't blame a team at all if they gave him the max contract. Like, would you at all blame Dallas if they gave Clint Capela a max? I wouldn't.
No, why wouldn't they? He's shown himself to be fantastic, and especially in the playoffs where you get even more respect for playing well in the playoffs. So that wouldn't surprise me at all. I think that a lot of teams should throw a lot of money at him, and I kind of think the Rockets need to do everything they can not to let that happen.
Yeah. So, like, Kyle has this theory, and I thought it was interesting, that the Rockets would try to come to the table with Clint Capela before he goes out to the open market. Like, get a deal done with him before teams chase him with offer sheets. So that contract isn't so poisonous. Restricted free agent, by the way, is brutal. And teams try to muck up contracts like crazy. Like, they add trade kickers, they front load it, they back load it, they do all sorts of stuff to a contract to make it as poisonous as possible to make sure you either aren't going to match it, or if you do match it, like, you're going to pay. You're going to swallow a bitter pill for it. And if the Rockets...
Morey pioneered that, too, a few years ago.
Yeah. He did that with... I mean, he pretty much took advantage of the poison pill with Omar Asik and Jeremy Lin. Like, he was the founder of this, right? Like, he... Restricted free agency was something he used as an avenue to get young talent. And, I mean, that this is what other teams are going to try to do. And, like, honestly, I think this is going to be a similar situation to Draymond Green when he was a restricted free agent a couple years ago. Like, I think he'll come to the table. I think he'll get a max. I think he'll get close to a max right up until his max contract offer, which is like 4 years, $96 million or something like that. And I think he's worth it, honestly. Like, I've been thinking about this for a couple of days. And among the centers in the NBA, like, nobody is as mobile as him. Nobody is as good in the pick and roll as him. Like, there are, like, in terms of switch defenders, he's been a fantastic, one of the league's best switch defenders pretty much since the 2014 Western Conference Finals. Like, he's been an amazing switch defender for the longest time. This year and last year, he's improved, like, tremendously as a rim protector, and his communication's gotten better. The Rockets just, like, deserve a ton of credit for his development. Like, he's year by year improved. He's become a better rebounder this year defensively. Offensively, he's just a guard's best friend. Like, and especially in this system where the Rockets run a ton of pick and roll, and he's just a constant lob threat, and he doesn't care about touches. He doesn't care that he's pretty much only going to get dunks and layups. Like, he doesn't want, like, you know, these post touches that other bigs around the league frankly need to feel motivated to play defense on the other side of the floor. He doesn't need all that. He's perfectly, you know, fine with taking these, you know, the touches he's capable with, and he's excelled at it. He's one of the best lob threats in the league. He is a really good finisher. He's a really good defender. And among centers in the NBA, like, he's perfect for this modern NBA, especially when you get deep in the playoffs. I mean, he was so effective in the play, like, again, in that Utah series when he got beat. He would just, when Donovan Mitchell beat him, he would just erase his shot at the rim, like, from behind. Like, and he did that stuff all the time. Like, even when he gets beat, he's still effective. And he, frankly, doesn't get beat that often off the dribble. He can hold his own ground. And he's one of the few bigs, like, one of the few true centers you can play in crunch time in a Warriors series. Like, you can't say that about, like, 80% of the bigs in the NBA. Like, he's someone you can keep out on the floor for a Warriors series. I think he might be worth the max. Like, I frankly, if I were a team, I'd give him the max.
Yeah, like I think you're right, and that's why they are probably going to want to prevent him from getting to the open market. They're going to need to give him a very friendly deal, maybe see if he'll take a little bit less than the total maximum like Draymond did.
Yeah.
And just give him a nice, solid contract. And he's young, so it's like the opposite of Chris Paul, right? You want to give him a ton of years and you know maybe some maybe like a player option that last year instead of giving him a lot of money necessarily, try to even it out that way, because you want him in as long term a contract as you can get, guarantee him a huge pile of money throughout his prime, and just keep Clint Capela on the Houston Rockets bench for the rest of his career.
You can't lose him. You cannot lose him. Like, in terms of the open market, there's nobody you can get to replace him. Like, even 70% of Clint Capela, there's nobody in the market that can do that. Like people think that what Clint Capela does is easy and you can replace him easily with, like, a Dwayne Dedman. You can't. You can't. Like, he's just such a great defender, especially, as I said before, switching. And he's gotten so much better at communication and the pick and roll stuff. Like, again, one of the best in the league, one of the best lob threats in the league. He's up there with Anthony Davis, up there with DeAndre Jordan, up there with any lob threat, like, you know, Rudy Gobert, any lob threat you want to put up in the league. He's up there with all of them, and he finishes at the rim really well. He doesn't have to dunk. He can do layups and stuff. He can finish, you know, with Euro steps and stuff. Like, he can run the floor, which is something damn near no bigs in the NBA can do. Like, there's like four or five like centers in the NBA that could run the floor like he can. Like, he legitimately glides when he's running the floor, and the Rockets throw him these really scary passes in transition. Like, he leaks out a lot, so James Harden would throw him these really scary passes that only James Harden would try, and he'll catch the ball and he'll dunk it and finish over two people in transition. Like, the guy is so skilled and so mobile. Like, he has great feet, great defensive ability, as I said. High IQ guy. You can't lose him. Like, there's nobody in the market that can replace him. Young guy, your only ascending talent, which I think is really important. This is an old roster. And in a roster that's aging like the Rockets are, you need as much young talent as you can. And to retain that talent, like, that's tremendously important.
Yeah, you can't let him go. That's just all there is to it. I don't see him going anywhere. People have talked about, like, oh, what if they have to lose Clint Capela? I don't think there's any scenario where you accept losing Clint Capela. He's such a perfect fit. He is extremely young. That's the biggest deal with him is that, yeah, like I said, they're an old team. They need a young guy who's going to be able to keep around, who can play all throughout James Harden's, you know, the rest of James Harden's prime, such as it is. So, yeah, I think it's pretty likely that they end up having to pay him that pile of money. And I think they're going to do it happily. I think that that Tillman Fertitta will buy him a dinner at one of his Landry's restaurants and get him a drink as he gives him the biggest paycheck of his life.
Yeah, like he's either going to get a Draymond type of contract or a Steven Adams type of contract where there is no haircut. Either way, you got to bring him back. Like, frankly, like, this idea that they, like, oh, what if you have to lose it? Well, he's a restricted free agent. You can go over the cap to keep him. Like, even in a scenario where they try to go after a star player, you don't have to lose him. Like, yeah. This is a similar situation to, like, Chandler Parsons back in 2014, where the Rockets could have added Chris Bosh and matched on Chandler Parsons and brought him back, right? But, you know, the only difference is Clint Capela is a much, much better player than Chandler Parsons was even at that time. Like, you got to keep him. And there is no scenario where you have to lose him, even to go after star power. He's not preventing you from acquiring anybody you want to acquire.
Nope. They just have to do everything by way of trades.
Yeah. Also, let's go ahead and talk about Trevor Ariza. He's also a free agent. Getting up there in age 2. I think he's also age 33, and he's declining a little bit in all areas of his game, pretty much. Like, he's like, there's no specific area of his game you can point to where, like, yes, he's declined tremendously there. He's just gotten a little bit worse as the years have gone by. He's not, like, when the Rockets first signed him, he's legitimately one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. He's not that anymore. He's a fine perimeter defender. He's a good perimeter defender. Not necessarily, you know, an elite-level perimeter defender. Like, he's pretty much what you want as in terms of a 3-and-D wing if he was, like, 4 years younger, right? He's getting up there in age, but I think the Rockets are still going to try to keep him because, I mean, if you look up and down the roster, there's, I mean, unless they unless they hit it big in free agency, there's nobody you can replace them with. Maybe you can bring back Lukumba Mute with your taxpayer mid-level, but I mean, still, you're lacking wing depth if you only bring him back.
They need every single one of those dudes. They need all of them. That's all there is to it. They have to have.
So what kind of contract are we talking about with Trevor Ariza?
See, that's a difficult one. I feel like he's probably going to be like one of the last guys to get re-signed. Depending on how he wants to go somewhere else, but I don't know. I don't see him really wanting to go somewhere else, right? He's pretty central to their team. He's very important. He's one of their many switchable guys. I don't know. I think that you don't want to give him a lot of years because he's about to age out pretty bad. So they might also have to like give him like a front-loaded contract. They gave him that like the declining contract last time, which I have no idea how he feels about it, but it was pretty useful for the team. But
yeah, 8 years, $32 million. Yeah. I mean, no, 4 years, $32 million. I'm sorry.
Yeah, which was an incredible deal then, and
yeah,
is still now. So they, I don't know, maybe they give him like a giant pile of money for a brief period of time just to
maybe
kind of mollify him.
I'm thinking like this is a similar situation to Andre Iguodala, where other teams may try to overpay him to break up the team or make you pay as much as you possibly can. Like the Warriors might like they might try to pay the Rockets back for what they did with Andre Iguodala last year. Like honestly, like there's this rumor that Chris Haynes reported on a podcast somewhere that that the Warriors are very interested in Trevor Ariza and might try to get him to take a pay cut to sign with him. I don't think that's true. I think that's Trevor Ariza's agent leaking stuff to Chris Haynes, so the Rockets get a pretty good idea where he's at and how much money he's going to demand on the open market. I honestly think the Rockets are going to probably have to swallow the pill and pay him like $10 million a year for like 2 or 3 years. Like I think
lucky if they get that. Yeah,
yeah. You might have to front load the contract, like as you said, like and pay him like $12 million this year and $8 million next year or whatever. They're gonna try and make that contract as short and as friendly as possible. But I think other teams are like specifically the Warriors. I think the Warriors are gonna be a team that's gonna try to make the Rockets pay a heavy amount of luxury tax. Because the Rockets did the same thing to them, and it's smart, and it's why wouldn't you try to do that? Lukumba Mute. The Rockets don't have bird rights for Lukumba Mute, and they pretty much only have their taxpayer mid-level exception, which is going to be $5.4 million this year to keep him. And that's an upgrade over his previous contract, which is a veteran's minimum. One of the best contracts in the NBA signed last summer in terms of dollar for value. Really, really great defender. Like, one of the best. Like, people think Trevor Ariza one of the best defenders in the NBA. Lukumba Mute is actually one of the best defenders in the NBA. Legitimately great. Can switch multiple positions. The only problem with him is he's just not as reliable as Trevor Ariza. Like, Trevor
Ariza. Stop dunking.
Yeah, it's not even that. It's like Trevor Ariza, game to game, he's just a durable monster. Like, he's just, like, game to game, you can rely on him to shoot threes and defend adequately. And game to game, you can't expect that from Lukumba Mute. Like, Lukumba Mute is not a great shooter. He's not as healthy as Trevor Ariza. Like, that's kind of the reason he's been getting these vet minimum deals the past couple of years. Like, this isn't his first year with shoulder injuries. He had this with the Clippers. And, like, the shooting really hampers him, especially come playoff time. Like, teams sag off of him like crazy and take their chances. And, you know, like, for the past couple of years, he's made teams pay. But, I mean, this year, his shoulder was so jacked up that I think it might have hampered his value. Like, frankly, like a team might try to take him, right? But, like, a smart team might try to scoop him up for cheap. But I don't think that, like, other teams are going to be as, like, I don't think he's going to demand, like, as much money as, like, let's say Andre Robertson did last year. Like, I think he's going to get, because of the shoulder injury and how his season ended, I think he's going to get underpaid again. I don't know what kind of contract he's going to get. I think the Rockets are going to try to bring him back for that taxpayer mid-level exception. And I think they should try their hardest to keep this guy. This guy is so good as a defender.
Yeah, Yeah, they're probably going to have to eat up their mid-level exception for that. And the problem with him, and the reason they would have to use that exception is that they only signed him for 1 year. They don't have bird rights. They have, I think it's called pre-bird rights. So they can give him like a little bit of a raise. They can give him like a 20% raise over the minimum or something without eating into any exceptions. But beyond that, which that'd be really low. That'd be like under $3 million. So anything beyond that, they'd have to use up and some or all of their mid-level four. And if it's above that mid level, like if he wants more than that, you know, 5.6 million or so, if he wants 6 million plus, they can't keep him. So they have to hope that his trade value or his not trade value, his signing value has been damaged by this, because if some other team does agree to terms with him more than that, there's nothing they can do. They can't offer him anything more than the mid level exception.
Yeah, like he might be an unfortunate cost of the Rockets cap situation. Like, he might be someone that the Rockets may have to let go, even though they really should try their best to keep him with their mid-level exception. Like, he may be someone that just outprices them. It really depends on the market, honestly. Like, a lot of money is dried up, so you may have that advantage over him. But I mean, can you really say that a team is not going to offer him over $5.4 million per year? It's really going to depend on him more than anything. Is he willing to take less? Is he willing to take another haircut for the team? Is he willing to take yet another cheap contract to come back and contend with the Rockets? I don't know. It's a real mystery.
Right now, I think that he probably will, just because it seems like that locker room gets along really well, and they have really good reason to believe that they could be in the finals next season. Because just, you know, the Warriors aren't going to meaningfully upgrade. They don't have any room to do so unless, like, LeBron goes there for the minimum or some stupid, like, cockamamie fantasy like that. So they don't have any reason to believe they can't get right back to where they were. That if they can just stay a little healthier, maybe they can go farther. And Luke's got to be thinking that, you know, if he was fully healthy, that things would have been a lot different. And I think that's the case. So I think they've got a good pitch to him this season. I think especially Chris Paul, his old buddy, is going to be able to. If he's probably already there, he probably doesn't need any convincing that was the case. So, right now I'd have to speculate that he probably would come back for some part of some or all of the mid-level exception. Because why wouldn't they want to finish what they started? And hey, it's a big upgrade over like the $2 million he was making last season.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. Like, the Rockets have basically half their playoff roster is gonna be a free agent, including Gerald Green, which we really didn't talk about all that much. I mean, and I feel bad about it. Like, he actually did play his ass off in the playoffs. Like, he contributed, gave the Rockets good minutes, especially when guys went down.
Gerald Green has been a positive addition to the team the entire season. Not hugely positive, but positive.
Yeah, great locker room guy. Like, the Rockets love him. The city loves him. Great locker room guy, great culture guy. I don't think the Rockets would give him any more than a minimum.
I think he's back. Yeah, I think he's back with that, like, maybe minimum plus 20% or whatever. They're not going to use any exceptions on him, but I think he'll probably come back for it, and they'll be happy to have him.
Yeah, yeah. So let's go ahead and get to the fun stuff. We wasted 27 minutes talking about how the Rockets can bring their free agents back.
We buried the lead quite aggressively.
Yeah, yeah. I did that on purpose, because I know we're going to spend the next 15 minutes talking about what we really want to talk about. So the Rockets had their annual exit interview, as we talked about earlier in the podcast, with the media like a while ago. And Daryl's comments have really haunted me for the last 2 weeks. And I feel guilty that we didn't make a bigger deal about it, what he said on the last podcast. Like, so Jonathan Fagan of the Houston Chronicle basically asked Morey how it was possible for the Rockets to both bring back their free agents and go after a high-level free agents. And Morey responds with, "We have new math, so that should tell you something." What the hell is he talking about? Those words have kind of rolled around in my head for a couple of days now. If the Rockets pull some crazy this summer, this is the Morey quote I'm coming back to. Like, this is the Morey quote we're all going to come back to. This is going to be the "we have something up our sleeve" of this summer if they actually land a third star.
I mean, the funny thing is, I don't think they really need new math. It's not really that crazy how they can land a big name star right now. It's kind of funny that I've seen a lot of coverage.
Before you go ahead, I don't want to cut you off there. I have a theory about this.
What's your theory? Is it a conspiracy theory?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay, let's hear it.
And this kind of goes along with my theory from last week. I think the Rockets secretly have a team lined up to take Ryan Anderson, and they're ready to dump his contract the second they have to. They've been doing their due diligence on Ryan Anderson for over a year now. Like, that's kind of an under-the-radar thing. Like, they've been talking to teams about Ryan Anderson for a year now. And, like, this idea that they don't have a couple ideas in mind, like, for teams that would be interested, or that they don't have a team that's interested in Ryan Anderson, I think that's kind of crazy. Like especially if you're giving draft picks back. And I don't think the Rockets were willing to give up draft picks in a Carmelo Anthony deal. They would definitely be willing to give up draft picks in a LeBron James deal, in a Paul George deal. And he has one last year left on his contract. After this year, he becomes an expiring contract, which is of real value. And I don't think that's being said enough. Like, a $20 million expiring contract next year, next year becomes... And you know, you may be thinking, what's Atlanta or whatever team they're going to get, they're going to trade Ryan Anderson to, going to do with an expiring contract? They already have loads of cap space, and no free agent wants to go there anyways. Well, here's the thing, man. An expiring contract to Atlanta may not mean much, but they may be willing to flip that contract to a team that's strapped for cash, which... There are a bunch of teams right now strapped for cash. Look at Charlotte right now. Look at Portland right now. Look at Detroit right now. There are a bunch of teams right now that are strapped for cash because of the crazy 2016 summer. And, you know, they're just eking for cap space right now. That contract becomes valuable in a year. Ryan Anderson, $20 million expiring next year, becomes valuable in trades, all that stuff. Nobody's talking about this, and I think it's crazy.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a lot easier to trade him, you know, this season, this summer, than next summer, or than previous summer. Because as you said, after the coming NBA season, then he'll expire the following season. 2 years, $40 million left in his contract is a lot better than 3 years, $60 million. And they probably have better reason to do so. I mean, I was going to ask you, do you like have somebody in the Bulls organization so you know they're going to take that contract? Or
No, this is just me throwing a shot in the dark and adding to my theory. Like, again, last podcast, if you remember, I said I think the Rockets are trading Ryan Anderson this year. No matter what happens, regardless of anything, I think he's gone. Because January, the Rockets made a strategic decision to bench Ryan Anderson. And that's when his contract really became hard to justify. Like, I defended his contract up until January. And when the Rockets moved him to the bench, it was no longer a $20 million a year starter. It was a $20 million a year reserve. And yeah, when they couldn't play him in the second round series against the Utah Jazz, a team that he's had a lot of success against, when they couldn't play him in that series, like, you can't play him against the Jazz? Like, to me, that really opened my eyes. Like, I have a hard time believing that he's going to be on the team next year. Like, Daryl Morey and the Rockets have not held on to bad contracts for more than 2 years. Ryan Anderson at this moment since they've signed PJ Tucker and they found a decent replacement at the power forward position, has become a bad contract for them.
Yeah, he's not useful to them anymore. Yeah. If he's not useful in the playoffs, he's not useful. That's kind of all there is to it. Unfortunately for him, he got hurt late in this season and it exposes how much they didn't need him. I guess he's an okay backup, but yeah, he doesn't do all the things, right? They need guys who are able to switch on, you know, 2 through 5 or whatever, 2 through 4 positions, and who can hit a 3. Like, if Ryan can't do something special, like create for himself, which he can't, he doesn't offer anything more to the table than, like I said, PJ Tucker does. And yeah, Ryan Anderson's a better 3-point shooter than PJ Tucker, but it's not enough to offset all the downsides of him. So yeah, I can see them getting rid of Ryan Anderson no matter what takes place.
Yeah, like, especially, like, we just talked about it, man. Like, they're going to be paying a crap load of money, like, upwards of $40 million in luxury tax. $40 million in luxury tax. That's insane. On top of their existing salary. Like they're going to pay $90-plus million in salary. Yeah, and I'm underselling it. I don't know exactly how much they're going to end up eventually paying. They're already paying, like, $68, $70 million, something like that. And they're going to pay Ryan Anderson $20 million a year to sit on the bench and not play in the playoffs? Like, I have a hard time believing that that's going to happen. And Kyle from our side disagrees with me. Like, I think they might just trade him into space anyways. Like, or you know, find a way to get less value, like, or better value for him in a trade. Like, I just have a hard time believing he's on the roster next year. I think when the Rockets said, we have new Matt, that should tell you something. I think, I sincerely think they're talking about Ryan Anderson. I really do. That's the only way you can theoretically create new Matt. You can't restructure deals in the NBA. Like, you're not going to restructure James Harden's and deal to get it, like, to get him to take like $10 million a year. Like, that's not happening. Like, you don't do that in the NBA. So, like, this is the only way they can theoretically create a new cap situation for themselves.
Yeah, like, and moreover, if they do have a taker for Ryan Anderson, his contract goes from being a negative to incredibly useful for this particular situation.
Right. Like, as I said, like, if the Atlanta Hawks have him, it's different from the Rockets having him, because he is, first of all, they get draft picks for him, and they can also get other stuff for him the minute they flip him to a team that's draft for cash, right?
Yeah, and, for some, like, useful vets or something.
Right, yeah. And let's talk about LeBron, man. We've been talking about LeBron for damn near 9 months now. Half of this podcast has pretty much been LeBron Watch 2018. he obviously
When we're not talking about LeBron, we're still talking about LeBron.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's crazy how the Rockets and LeBron have been, like, indisputably linked for the past year. Pretty much the moment they traded for Chris Paul, these LeBron rumors would not stop. Like, it's just been 24/7 LeBron watch. Zach Lowe had that column back in, I think it was October, maybe even like November or December, about how maybe we I think the line was, maybe we're underselling the idea of the Rockets somehow acquiring LeBron James. And since that point in time, we haven't undersold it at all. Like, that, like, the Vegas
line. He spoke it into reality.
Yeah, the Vegas line for LeBron and the Rockets is, like, the Rockets are in the top three. Pretty much in any sports book you check, the Rockets are in the top three for his services for the money line. Now,
they've actually fallen a bit, which is funny.
Yeah, they were number one at the beginning. Remember, like they opened up as the favorite to land LeBron. Then time passed, and now it's the Lakers. And some sports books have
the Sixers briefly. Yeah,
some sports books still have the Sixers. So right now, the Rockets are still in the top three, and I don't expect that to change anytime soon. But again, this is Vegas. But, like, I mean, if you look at winning situations across the league, the Rockets are it, man. The Rockets are knocking on the door. Like, they push the again. If not for a Chris Paul injury, they're in the NBA Finals, and they might be NBA champions as we speak right now, right? Like, if not for a Chris Paul injury, if not for 27 missed threes in a row, like, a bunch of bad luck, an unfavorable whistle. Like, I'm not going to call it bad officiating or whatever. I'll call it an unfavorable whistle, right? Like, the calls didn't go their way. It's fine. It happens sometimes, right? All that stuff combined and prevented them from making the NBA Finals. And we're here now. And, like, in terms of winning situations across the league, we're pretty much talking Philly or Houston. Philly actually has the space to acquire LeBron James outright. And, you know, they're a young, up-and-coming team. They won 52 games last year, if I remember off the top of my head. I think that's how much they won. Joel Embiid's 24 years old. Simmons is like 20, 21. Really, really young supporting cast, but really, really good supporting guys. Like, Embiid might be one of the 15 best players in the NBA already. The guy is ridiculous. Simmons is one of the best passers I've ever seen for his age. Like, that, if you're talking about, like, winning situations, it's pretty much Philly or Houston. And I have a hard time selling myself on LA, though I'm not going to completely dismiss it as some people have. Like, they have two max cap slots, and it's the Lakers. And since you and I have been watching basketball, the Lakers have always had an allure about them, and it's never disappeared. Like, and I know the past 5 years, it's been kind of depressing watching them try to land, like, meetings with free agents. Like, LaMarcus Aldridge turned them down. Like, if you told me that, like, in 2005, that LaMarcus freaking Aldridge was going to turn down a meeting with the Lakers, like, I wouldn't have believed you. I would not have believed you. But, yeah, their allure has faded a little bit. But I still think with Magic coming in, with Pelinka coming in, the young assets they have with Lonzo, Randall, Ingram, and two max cap slots, like, and Kuzma, Like, I do think it's an intriguing option, but I really do think the two favorites right now are Philly and Houston.
I do think that Los Angeles has a little more appeal than people think, not so much because of winning, but just kind of what they represent. Like, I think that if LeBron wants to take his legacy in a different direction, slash just kind of play out the string and have a good time, that's a very appealing option. I've said it before, if I was LeBron, I would likely go to the Lakers just to, to have an extremely pleasant, like, last 5 years of my career or whatever.
Yeah.
But that being said, you know, if he goes there, the assumption, I guess, is that, like, they also pick up Paul George or something. And then who knows what can happen. But, this is sort of the thing about LeBron, is that there's not really a lot of great options for him this season. Because everyone is
Every option has a drawback, I would say.
Yeah. Like, a meaningful one, right? So I want to go down the list. Like, the Lakers have the drawback that they're only going to be good if they pick up Paul George. And even if they do, there's really no guarantee they're going to be as good as Houston or Golden State. In fact, they probably won't be. So that's a big problem for them, right? That, like, they're a few years out from being that good, depending on the development of their other players. And LeBron doesn't really have that much time, and neither does Paul George. Maybe they can convince themselves that they'll be good, but then you're just going to have LeBron not even making the finals, most likely, in the West, which is a real step downward for him. So maybe he trades the glory of the finals for, you know, an infinite number of fans and the adulation thereof. But that seems like a weird choice.
Yeah.
If he goes to the Sixers, that's a pretty good call. He's going to be able to win pretty soon. They're still pretty young. They're still going to have problems in, like, the next, I think, like, one, maybe two playoff seasons. Probably two. Young players do have issues during the playoffs.
The Simmons shooting thing is a real issue, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it makes it hard to play him next to LeBron also, which is fairly bad. So the upside, though, is that he can basically run the team. The downside is that he can basically run the team. they're picking up and they're going to pick up a new GM after the whole Brian Colangelo burner mayhem.
God, I so badly want to talk about that again right now, but we're not.
We hit it. It's done.
Yeah, continue.
I think it does appeal to him that he basically will be able to run things, but we've seen that LeBron is an amazing player and he has the intelligence of a coach while he's on the floor, but he is a bad GM. You know, like, the guys that he wants to pick up are not the guys who actually make a coherent team. So that might be appealing to him, but I think it would in the end not be a great idea. And also, like I said, he has a whole bunch of really young players. It's very iffy how he's going to do in the playoffs. He probably would make, like, he would still have to be favored to make the finals every year, but I don't think it'd be a big enough upgrade over his current situation for the next few years for him to actually challenge the Warriors.
Well, I think it would be a big upgrade. I'm not sure if they challenge the Warriors, but I think it would absolutely be a big upgrade. I mean,
yeah, I think they win two games instead of zero in the finals.
Oh, sure. If you're talking about, like, that much of an, okay, yeah, I get what you're saying. But yeah, you're right. Like, it's going to be, there's going to be some ups and downs with a young team. And you don't want LeBron to go in there with a bunch of control, especially if he does this thing where he signs a bunch of one-year deals. It makes the front office make a bunch of short-term decisions. Like, that's where it really gets messy. That's pretty much happened in Cleveland, and he leveraged his contract situation to get the Cavs to sign guys like Tristan Thompson and J.R. Smith to huge contracts.
Now they're hamstrung by them.
Yeah. So, yeah, I get what you're saying.
That's probably overall his best choice, honestly, if he wants to stay in the East.
Yeah.
And, like, keep going to the finals. But there is an allure and drawback to Houston, right? So if you look at Houston, the allure is that Chris Paul is there. Chris Paul is probably his best friend in the world, as far as everyone can tell. He knows that going there, as long as he plays in the system, right, as long as he, like, doesn't need to have the ball every single possession, which maybe he doesn't want to. I wouldn't want to if I were him at this point. He can just kind of go at half speed in the regular season, and they're just going to crush everybody. That is an assured contender. Like, not just contender, but like a super contender. But they do have the ability, as we've been dancing around, to pick him up while only losing one meaningful rotation player, depending on how the deal to move Ryan Anderson goes. Because Ryan Anderson's no longer a meaningful rotation player. Almost certainly, Eric Gordon is going out in a deal that brings in LeBron James. But Eric Gordon to LeBron James is an upgrade of immeasurable quality.
Yeah, okay, so I'll get to what I was going to say. So LeBron, his comments after the finals really struck me. Like, so I think it was Mark Stein. No, it was Howard Beck who asked him, like, what are your priorities going into this offseason, right? And he basically asked him without directly asking him that. He said, like, are your priorities from last offseason, the last time you switched teams, the same time, the same ones from this time, right? And he pretty much said, yeah, they're the same. I want to play with talented, cerebral players who can see things on the floor develop before they actually happen. I mean, that pretty much screams Chris Paul and James Harden, right? Like, that those comments really struck out to me. I tweeted it, and everybody ran with that to go with whatever they wanted to mean. Like, he's talking about Lonzo. He's talking about Simmons. Ben Simmons actually liked the tweet of LeBron saying he wanted to play with cerebral players. So, you know, like, I love free agency so much. I'm getting off topic. But, yeah, like, that really struck me, man. He wants to play with intelligent playmakers. I mean, flat out, he wants to play with guys who know what the hell they're doing, who aren't bringing the ball out while they're tied in a NBA Finals game with the game on the line, dribbling the ball out and letting the clock go to zero. Like, he does not want to play with J.R. Smith again. Like, he just doesn't. Like, he wants to play with a talented supporting cast that knows what the hell they're doing. And that strikes me as, you know, he wants to play with veterans. He talked about him being in championship mode for the next, you know, however long his career is going to be. Like, I'd say he still has a good 3 years left in his prime. At minimum, right? Would you agree with me? Yeah. So, he still has 3 LeBron years left. And 3 LeBron years, like, you'd think he'd want to play with more experienced veterans rather than, you know, the Lakers and Lonzo Ball and Kyle Kuzma and you know, Ingram or the Sixers with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, and have to teach these guys all the tricks in his craft, or, you know, try and frankly have a rebuilding project again. Like, he had this when he came back to Cleveland, like with Kyrie Irving. Like, he doesn't want to have that mentorship anymore. I don't think. I think he really just wants to win.
And who would want to do that? Yeah, who would want to have to be daddy again?
Yeah, it's just asking a lot. Like, having to teach a new group of players who probably aren't as hungry as him yet. Like, you know, I'm sure Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid have real aspirations of that championship, but they aren't starving for a championship like James Harden and Chris Paul are. Like, James Harden and Chris Paul almost tasted it last year. Like, they were on the brink of it last year. And they want it badly, and you know they want it badly. Their comments say they want it badly. Their work, everything they've done this season, says they want it badly. Chris Paul being 33 tells you he wants it badly. They want to remove all doubt at the end of their career. So why wouldn't you want to play with guys like that? Like, to me, Houston's a really attractive destination. And I completely understand why they're in the top 3. So we should probably talk about how they can make this happen, because it's incredibly complicated, especially with the cap situation the Rockets are in.
Well, I do want to note the drawbacks for Houston for LeBron, which there are a couple of them. They're real. One is that he would basically, we're about to get into this, but he would basically have to opt into the final year of his deal, which is maybe not what he's looking for. You know, he would probably like to make that deal even larger than just opting into that last year, which is still plenty big.
It's notable that the last year of his deal is actually larger than a new contract first year deal. So the first year of his next new contract, that $36 million a year figure, whatever he has for the last year, would actually be larger than the first year of his next deal. So there is some benefit, but I get what you're saying.
Well, unless it's with the Cavs, correct? Like, the Cavs could still offer him more, presumably?
Yeah, for 5 years.
Yeah, so he wouldn't be able to, or he also wouldn't be able to necessarily get, like, a super long deal there. And more importantly, I think the biggest drawback for LeBron going to Houston is that he would not be in charge of the team. I mean, he would certainly have a lot of clout, but I think straight up he would not be the boss of that team. Like, he would easily become the boss of a lot of other teams.
Yeah,
it's Daryl's team, and it's also Harden's team and Chris Paul's team, right? Like, they have a real coach. They have a real GM. They have a front office. They have an organization. They have other stars. They have a system that works. So the benefit is that he could just kind of chill and not have to be the entire system. He wouldn't have to be daddy again. But the downside is that he also wouldn't be able to do that. Like, if he comes and says to Daryl Morey, like, I want to be able to make final decision on personnel, I don't think Daryl Morey cedes that, right? I don't think he says, like, flat out, like, no, you're the boss. I think he's like, no, we'll talk about it, right? And I think they're also the only team who doesn't have to take that from LeBron. Like, I think if LeBron says, I'll join your team, but only if it's understood that I'm in final charge of, like, every decision, they're going to be like, that's probably a bad idea, right? Like, we don't need to give you that. We can just continue to exist as the contender we are and confident that we'll do so without letting a player run the whole system, which would be extremely, like, unhealthy for the organization. So I think there is a little bit of concern there. He would have to actually not be the number one alpha and omega of what that team does. He would have to actually, for the first time in his career, defer to a front office who actually is good at things. I mean, he didn't really defer to the Heat very much, and that was a conflict with him. So I think it's worth wondering what that's going to mean to him and potentially going to Houston, because he's a smart guy. He knows this is how it would be.
Yeah, with that being said, I do think the Rockets take input from their star players. Like, Daryl has...
Oh, they do. They certainly do.
Yeah, Daryl's talked about this. Like, he consults with Harden on everything. He's done this for 6 years or however long Harden's been here.
But Harden's not the boss, right? He does not decide every front office move or whatever. He just has, like, a reasonable amount of input into it.
Yeah, so LeBron will have some say. Same with Chris Paul, same with Harden. But you're right, he's not going to have the say. Like Daryl's not going to get bullied by LeBron to sign an aging player like J.R. Smith to a ridiculous contract like the Cavs did, right? Like, that's not gonna fly here. That's the way Daryl's operated. That's the way he's always operated. He's smart. He's forward-thinking. That's why he's so damn good at his job, right? That's why we always talk about him as being one of the best general managers in the league. So he's not gonna get bullied by subtweet LeBron. Like, that's not gonna happen.
Yeah.
At the same time, like, I've heard the sentiment from some Rockets fans, and I can't believe it. Like, people have told me this to my face, and people in my mentions have said this. I've heard this on the radio. I can't believe there's a sentiment of Rockets fans that don't want LeBron James. Like, that blows my mind. And it's kind of making me angry right now that there's people out there that legitimately don't want LeBron James on their team. And I make jokes about it during the playoffs. Like every time LeBron would do something ridiculous, I would tweet, like, imagine not wanting LeBron James on your favorite team, right? I'm poking fun at these people when I say that, because these people exist. I'm not making it up. I've met these people.
Yeah.
Like, there are people who don't want the drama that goes with LeBron. Listen, is it going to get annoying when PJ Tucker gets subtweeted in mid-January? Maybe, but who cares? You have LeBron James on your favorite basketball team, one of the three greatest players of all time in NBA history. One of the, if not, you know, he's continued to build a case that he may be the greatest player of all time, right?
Can I take a stance that's kind of adjacent to that stance and explain it out?
Go ahead, man.
Okay, so I am not totally unsympathetic to that view, which is to say this, and I'm going to try to do this as, like, specifically as I can, which is that I wish the Rockets didn't have to consider signing LeBron James, if that makes any sense. I would prefer a universe where this Rockets team, as it currently exists, was able to win this championship, which I know it's a stupid thing to say, duh, of course I want that. But I think that there's a certain value to it being James Harden's championship and somewhat Chris Paul's championship, of those guys being the ones who did it. Because when LeBron comes in, it's a different team. And I feel like that team is better, and I want that better team. But there's a certain uniqueness to the current Rockets team that I would potentially miss a little bit. I think it's spiritually preferable to win with this team. To go full bore, just massive arms race, get LeBron, it's not exactly the Rockets anymore. It's LeBron plus the Rockets. It's still the Rockets. It's still a championship for your city. LeBron is still amazing, and I love watching him. But it does take a little something away from, like, those of us, and I count myself as one of them, who absolutely love James Harden and his game and want to see him get all the glory in the world.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so, like, we talked about this in our group chat, and I'll get into this, but, yeah, you're right. Like, there is an element of, like, this team was extremely lovable, right? Like, it was an extremely fun Rockets team to watch. They played defense. They're one of the best defensive teams in the league. James Harden was incredible, an MVP candidate, averaged 30 points per game, had some phenomenal nights, really entertaining nights, especially when he had that step back flowing. Chris Paul was an unbelievable second star to have. Clint Capella is so fun and really fun to have as a release valve for your offense. The PJ Tucker, again, gritty guy that you'd love on your team. This team was really lovable and really fun. And I understand what you're saying. The Rockets fans are totally gonna give. They're totally gonna give LeBron the KD treatment. In that, like, what I'm talking about is the way Warriors fans treat KD right now. That's the way Rockets fans are gonna treat LeBron when he gets here, and that's fine. It doesn't matter as long as you're winning. You know, who cares? Who gets the credit? Who cares? How your fans feel? Who cares about all that? Like, it doesn't really matter. In a basketball sense, but I understand from a spiritual sense what you're talking about. Like it's more fun to watch James Harden and your home. He's not really homegrown talent, but he's basically homegrown talent. He's been here since he's 22.
Much longer, yeah. Yeah. In my opinion, I would rather the universe where the Warriors don't have Kevin Durant and the Rockets don't have LeBron James. Because the Warriors were more fun before Kevin Durant, and I think in a certain way the Rockets will have, you know, if... On the chance that they pick up LeBron James, I think they will have been more fun without LeBron James as well. Like, I think there's a little bit more identity the fewer stars you have. So I would rather see those two teams duking it out, but they have to pick him up so they'll be able to beat this current Warriors team.
Yeah.
They need to pick him up to increase their chances. I think they can beat the Warriors currently, but of course you pick up LeBron James, he makes your team much better.
Right, yeah, it's with that, like, again, like, I understand what you're saying, like, again, James Harden was...
There's no choice.
Yeah.
There's no choice.
You don't have a choice, right, but, like, I want to get back to what I was saying, like, James Harden, I think Rockets fans specifically have an attachment to James Harden, because they've watched him grow up from a 22-year-old who was just learning how to be the best player on a team to what he is now, a soon-to-be MVP... almost made it the NBA Finals with him as your best player, and I understand all that, and I get the adoration you'd want as James Harden being the best player on our title team. Like, you want him to get Finals MVP, you'd want him to erase all the playoff doubt by himself. But it's LeBron James. Crap doesn't matter. All that crap doesn't matter because it's LeBron James, and he may take you to three straight Finals because he's that damn good, and he's one of the best. He's the best player of this generation. And one of the greatest players of all time, and you take him no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely. You can discuss the prices thereof, but there is no question as to whether or not you sign LeBron James.
Yeah, but Rockets fans are totally gonna give him the KD treatment. Like, they, like, we talked about this in our group chat. Like, people are gonna have more fun when James Harden's going off on Rockets Twitter than they will when LeBron James goes off. Like, they'll love it when LeBron goes off, right?
Because, well, he's not ours.
Yeah, he's not. Yeah, you're 100% right. You took the words right out of my mouth. The Rockets fans are going to feel like it's not theirs. And there's a certain ownership to having someone in your ball club for 6 years and wanting to see him climb the mountain and get it himself. But again, the Rockets are in title chasing mode. It doesn't matter. All that stuff doesn't matter. I'm sure Rockets fans would much prefer a championship over all that flowery BS. Like, I think they don't care. Like, I think the front office absolutely doesn't care.
No, of course they don't. Why would they?
If you gave Daryl Morey truth serum right now, if he cared which way he won a championship with James Harden as his best player or LeBron James as a player, he would absolutely say he doesn't give a damn. As long as I get the title.
The sooner the title, the better.
Right, yeah.
Right. That's it.
Yeah, like, what, we're getting a title? Where do I sign? Where do I, like, that's where this front office is. That's where they've been the past few years. Like, they are so damn hungry. And if it takes getting LeBron to get over the hump, you do it without a doubt. No yep. questions asked. Well, show me the dotted line, I'll do it. Right?
So, yeah, so how do you get LeBron James is the question. He says yes, now what?
Okay, so this is how it's done. It's basically what Chris Paul did last year, the opt-in trade. And you have a small period of time to get this done. Pretty much after the draft and before June 29th. A very definitive timetable to get this done. Yeah. After that, it gets very difficult. Because before the draft, you can't trade your pending first-round pick. Because the Rockets traded their last first-round pick. So you have to wait for the draft to be over so you can trade two back-to-back picks. Because there's a rule in the NBA, CBA, called the Stepien rule, right? Where you're not allowed to trade back-to-back picks. It's put in there to prevent front offices from doing stupid and protects them, basically. So you can't do it before the draft. You have to wait till after the draft so you have all your assets to trade. And the reason I say you have to do it before June 29th is June 29th is the opt-in date, the last day you can opt into your contract. So LeBron James obviously has a player option for 2018-19, and he asked to opt into that by June 29th and asked to request to be traded to the Rockets before that date. So you have that very definitive table to get a deal done, ideally. There are other ways to get LeBron, but it involves getting hard capped if you do a sign trade, or yeah. it would involve basically gutting your entire roster, asking people to take pay cuts, and all that stuff. Like, it would require, like, Chris Paul take a pay cut, Clint Capela take a pay cut, all that stuff to get LeBron on your team. So
yeah, that, and you can evade all that stuff just by him deciding he's going to go to the team in that window of time.
Yeah, so they have to rush him at this point. So, like, the recruitment process should have already started.
Chris Paul is already, yeah, he's already all in.
Yeah, it should have already started. The minute the buzzer sounded on the NBA Finals, Chris Paul had a text waiting for LeBron in his inbox already. Like, by halftime, the text message should have already been sent.
He probably sent it, like, while they were in the Western Conference Finals, man.
Yeah.
They've probably been talking about it all season. They do not monitor player contact with other players because it basically is impossible to do so.
It's not tampering,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, even stuff that, like, would be considered tampering, it's just there's such a fuzzy line that what are you going to do? You're just going to tell players they can't discuss, like, work stuff? Like, that's just... You can't do it. You can keep Daryl Morey from talking to LeBron, but Chris Paul can talk to Daryl Morey as much as he wants, and Chris Paul can talk to LeBron James as much as he wants.
As a middleman, right, yeah. So let's talk about the components of the deal. So the Rockets would have to send back at least $20 million in salary. Off the top of my head, there's probably more than that, but I'm thinking off the top of my head. So it's like a 120% rule, right? You have to send within 120% of the contract. Within 20% of the contract, actually, is the right way to probably put it. Over, under, right? So they could send back Ryan Anderson, and Ryan Anderson would be going to a third team because the Cavs are not going to take back
Ryan.
Don't
want that. Yeah.
Yeah, they are not going to take back Ryan Anderson because they're not going to lose LeBron only to pay luxury tax for not having LeBron James on a mediocre playoff team, basically, what the Cavs would be without LeBron James, right? They're not gonna pay luxury tax next year. If they're gonna lose LeBron, they're gonna do what they can to get rid of all the bad contracts on their roster, and so they're not gonna take back Ryan Anderson. That's a non-starter. So you'd have to trade Ryan Anderson to a third team, and this is what I'm talking about when I say I think they have a third team lined up. So they would have to trade Ryan Anderson to a third team and trade him into space with draft picks because that third team is not gonna take back Ryan Anderson's contract without significant compensation. So that would be at least one first round draft pick, if not multiple first round draft picks, right? To compensate LeBron James trade, they know why you're trading Ryan Anderson to them. They're not stupid.
They're gonna make you pay for it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. They're going to squeeze you for every draft pick they can, and you do it because it's LeBron James, right? Obviously, and so the Rockets have to trade back draft picks and Ryan Anderson to them. And that third team could either send back contracts to Cleveland, or you'd send back additionally Eric Gordon, and PJ Tucker to Cleveland. And those are good contracts that Cleveland could trade.
You don't necessarily need to send PJ Tucker also, depending on how things go. So there is the chance that you can just be sending out Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon. That's the dream scenario.
Yeah.
But may or may not find out if that's realistic.
Ideally, that third team has contracts that they would like to send back to Cleveland, and so they could help you and be an actual participant in the trade rather than taking back space.
Well, if Eric Gordon picks up Cleveland picks up Eric Gordon, then it more or less works, even if they don't have like a lot of contract to send back to Cleveland.
The problem is, and David Wiener's done a good job in talking about this. Like, the moment they picked up George Hill, getting Eric Gordon became really, really complicated because George Hill is owed $20 million next season. That's a lot of damn money, and that to pay a guard, it doesn't make a lot of financial sense to pay Eric Gordon in addition to George Hill all that money. Eric Gordon's a nice player, really good player, really good. Probably can be better.
It's a good contract, though. You can flip that contract, but yes.
Sure, but you can't trade him right away, right? You have to wait a certain amount of time. Yeah.
Or unless you just want to trade him by himself, in which case you can't flip him right away. But
right, yeah, you can trade him by himself. You can't trade him any package deal, but most deals are packaged. So you're right, yeah. But they can trade him technically, but only in a deal by himself, or they can try trading Rodney Hood. And some other salary to come off the roster and just keep Eric Gordon. Who knows? But that's how the framework of a deal would theoretically work. It's possible, but it's going to take a lot from all parties to accept. First, the biggest hurdle is getting the commitment from LeBron. LeBron has to get that commitment. You have to get that commitment from LeBron. Then you execute.
Yeah, basically, by the way.
Yeah, basically, again, you have to get it after the draft and before the June 29th. That middle period is all the time you have. You have to be recruiting him right now, hard and fast. And after July 1st, it gets incredibly difficult. It's possible, but it's incredibly difficult.
Yeah, it makes things a lot messier.
You have to gut the roster.
Yeah, that's when it changes over the financial year for the NBA, and things are a lot different. So whether it happens before, it's either going to happen like moments before or moments after midnight turning to July. It's the long and short of it.
Yeah, basically. And again, it's incredibly complicated to do after July 1st, but it's possible. You have to renounce a lot of people. You have to ask people to take pay cuts. So maybe that's the new math that Daryl was talking about.
Well, it also depends on, like, for example, if LeBron opts in and then it becomes July 1st, you have a bunch of different numbers, which I'd have to go over the numbers, but it may or may not prove like more useful for them, because the main thing is that he needs to opt into that contract and he has to do it by the 29th.
Yeah. So, you want to talk about Paul George?
Sure. Why not? Paul George is pretty good.
Paul George is very good. Paul George is another star to be rumored in the Rockets' direct line of sight in free agency. Basically, because there's been a report already by Kelly Iko that the Rockets are going to aggressively target Paul George. And Woj confirmed it on this draft special that ESPN did, that the Rockets are going to try to get Paul, are going to very aggressively target Paul George. I think, like, that's going to happen.
They?
Yeah. And so to get Paul George, it's going to be a similar situation to LeBron, but a much easier situation in that his Paul George contract isn't as big, and you're not just trading Eric Gordon to a team that that doesn't want to be good. You're trading him to a team that wants to be good because they have Russell Westbrook in his prime, and they have, like, so basically you have to, Paul George has to go to Oklahoma City and say, I want out.
I'm out. Yeah,
get something for me right now. And you could theoretically trade Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, some nice pieces, a first round pick maybe, to Oklahoma City, get Paul George, and it can be a clean, you know, team to team trade. But that's if Oklahoma City wants to play ball, and who knows how that relationship has recovered since the James Harden trade. God knows if Sam Presti wants to do a deal with Daryl Morey ever again. there's some doubt there, but listen, if Paul George is leaving, you get something for him if he gives you the opportunity. So the same thing would have to happen. June 29th is the last day, and you have to do it after the draft. And You could theoretically do it after July 1st, and it'd be more easy. It'd be easier to suggest
the money's
that,
a lot easier.
Yeah, for Paul George because his max is going to be lower. Also, it's easier to tell Paul George to take a pay cut rather than LeBron James because LeBron James is, first of all, he's LeBron James, one of the three greatest players of all time in his prime, 33, vice president of the Players Association. That's a tough sell to LeBron. A much easier sell to Paul George.
Yeah, and I think Paul George would be... I wouldn't call that a consolation prize. That's also a massive prize. Yeah. He would be an extremely good fit, I think, in that system, taking basically the Eric Gordon or like PJ Tucker role. I think in that case, you give them like whichever one of those two guys they prefer overall, because the money is a lot easier to make work.
Much cleaner fit, I'll say that. It's definitely much easier to make it work under the Rockets' current system of offense. And
yeah, his role becomes quite clear.
Trevor Ariza on steroids.
Yeah, he's an excellent second or third best player for sure.
Yeah.
And that really just raises your ceiling a lot. Like, I think that this is an extremely exciting scenario. It doesn't come with a lot of those weird spiritual-like questions that LeBron does, I think. Right. You always want to take LeBron rather than Paul George, but like taking Paul George is fantastic. that's an incredible A++ offseason.
Right. The Rockets tried to get Paul George last year, and it's possible that you know this is the year they actually land him. You know, it really depends on Paul George's mindset going into free agency. If he's really dead set on LA, which a lot of people do think around the league think he is. Same Mamik had their report 2 years ago about him, you know, asking out of Indiana because he's going to the Lakers, right? Like, he told Indiana up front, I'm going to LA as soon as my contract is over, trade me, right? And he put them in a tough spot because they got leaked to the media, and it was basically impossible to trade him at that point because they had no leverage. And so a lot of people think he's still dead set on LA. We have no idea. He hasn't talked about LA in a long time. He's had this year with Oklahoma City. And it was I don't know what to describe that year. Like it was a fine year. Like they won 46 games. They had a competitive first round series, but not a good year or a particularly successful year. Just a fine year. Like it was like they achieved bare minimum.
It was a comparative discount, though. It was way below what they expected and right. what they needed. So right.
Especially
it's going
to
be a bit of
a
disappointment. Yeah.
Yeah. It was definitely like. They like internally. They were definitely thinking we're getting to the second round without a problem, and possibly the Western Conference Finals. Like that. That's definitely what Oklahoma City was thinking when they traded for Paul George, and a lot of people thought they would make the Conference Finals or even get to the second round. And man, they've underachieved all year, and you know they achieved basically the. If you were to ask me the bare minimum amount of wins and playoff success you could have with the roster they had, I would say exactly what they did. They'd win 46 games and lose in the first round. That's the bare minimum of that roster, basically.
Yeah. I don't think they have to be happy about it, but I don't know what's going on in Paul George's head. I don't know what's going on in any of their heads. There's a lot of questions for that Thunder team, and we're about to see how they answer them. I think that we've kind of all gotten distracted from it by these other, honestly, more important storylines going on, but that's a big tornado of drama just looming over there.
Yeah, so God knows what Paul, like, nobody really knows what Paul George is going to do. A lot of people are so dead, like, especially in the media, a lot of people are so dead set that he's going to LA. I'm not so sure that's still the case. Like, he's a competitive player. Like, this idea that he wouldn't try to explore other options is kind of crazy to me. Like, he's that hell-bent on LA. Like, he wouldn't try to go to, let's say, you know, the Sixers and be a competitive team in the Eastern Conference. Like, be a legitimate contender for the NBA Finals. Like, I have a hard time believing that. So, yeah. Paul George is let's talk about his basketball fit. Fantastic defender. One of the best defenders in the NBA. Legitimately, probably the second best perimeter defender in the NBA after Kawhi Leonard, a healthy Kawhi Leonard. Would you say? Like he's up there? He's up there with like his own teammate, Andre Robertson. Like he's damn good. One of the best defenders in the NBA. fantastic shooter, like a really, really good three-point shooter, shot 40% from three this year. He's around a 37% career three-point shooter. So, you know, all in all, a pretty good three-point shooter. Good off the dribble threat. Likes to ISO a lot, but I think in the Rocket system, I think they can mold him to be, like, he's a very moldable player. Really good cutter.
He can do everything.
Yeah, so. he can do a lot of things. Nothing he can do exceptionally great except for defense, for defend and shoot the ball. But a very, very solid, as you said, second or third option on a championship team should the Rockets choose to go that route.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I would love for that to happen. Like I said, it's unqualified excitement about that possible outcome.
Right, yeah, because as you said, the stuff about James Harden not being able to win with his own team, that goes out the window because he's still the best player on the team, right? And he's still, all the spirit of the team would still feel the same. And, you know, you don't feel guilty about enjoying an NBA title with Paul George on the team, right? As you would with LeBron James. And that's pretty much the situation the Rockets are in. Again, it's going to be, we're talking, like, it's likely the Rockets don't get any of these guys. Like,
that's the most likely scenario. We have to remember that.
Yeah, it's like, we're just talking theoreticals here. This is the off-season podcast. This is our most downloaded podcast every year. I wonder why. Everybody loves the offseason, and we're getting into it strictly because these are the possibilities and we should discuss them. And the most likely route is that they bring back their core and go at it again and improve around the edges. Like that's probably where what they try to do.
Yeah, just kind of run it back maybe with some upgrades. But you know what? That's not bad.
That's
really good.
So we've got an hour and 15. I could go on this for at least another 15 minutes. I'm excited. I'm sure you're excited. Like, this quote about we have new Matt, so that should tell you something. That's been stuck in my head for the longest time. And I'm so glad we got to discuss it on this podcast. If the Rockets do something, we're going to come back to that quote and say, aha, like, this is what they were talking about, right? And, yeah. It should be fun. I've never, like, in the history of Daryl Morey, I've never had a boring offseason. Like, I've never seen a boring Daryl Morey offseason. Like, even when they brought back their core after 2014-15, they traded for Ty Lawson, like, which a lot of people forgot. they're always consistently a fascinating storyline going into the offseason because they're always aggressive for star power, and they're always doing stuff. They're always talking to teams about, you know, possible trade discussion. So this is always one of the more interesting teams to talk about, and this offseason should be fun.
Yep, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Give us a good rating on iTunes to be on the show. Follow us on Twitter @RedNationHoops and @DoNots. And yeah, thanks, guys.